Paul Moffat.
I'm Jan Moffat.
And this is Way Too Seriously, the podcast where we talk about kids' movies and take them way too seriously. Today we watched and will be talking about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. Now before we even go further, we need to fess up about something. We probably mentioned this in the last podcast you heard, but we are recording this episode about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2 before we have watched and recorded Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 1.
Just to mess things up.
So we have a plan. Our plan, if all goes well, is that you will have heard our Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs episode before you hear this one, but we haven't recorded it yet.
So we don't know what we said. It's all a mystery to us.
So you know more. You, dear listener, know more than even we know about us.
That's kind of freaky.
Anyway.
I don't know how I feel about that.
The point, really, of bringing this up now is, as we go through our discussion of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, we may, I have no idea whether we're going to be recovering ground or how it's going to relate to the discussion that you heard just last week, presumably, about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 1. So, Jan, having said all that, do you want to tell us a little bit about this movie?
Yes, I do. All right, so Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, or as I'm going to call it from now on, Cloudy 2, because
I think we should call
it way too long.
Quackum 2. Quackum 2.
No.
In the tradition of the...
You know. No. Okay, so this is a 2013 movie, the sequel to a 2009 movie, loosely based on a children's book by Judy Barrett. It stars Bill Hader, Anna Faris, James Caan, Andy Samberg, Benjamin Bratt, etc. We'll talk more about the cast. It is the story of the continued story of Flint Lockwood. Just after the events of the first movie, their island has been destroyed, and he finds his childhood hero comes to hire him. They find out that the island has been taken over by living food. Him and all of his friends, Flint and all of his friends, go back there to stop the machine. It turns out that his childhood hero is a villain, and he manages to defeat him in the end and rescue all of the food animals. Is that a good enough summary?
I think that's fine. I think we'll cover more plot as we go forward, but that's all you really need to know.
Yeah.
So let's start where we usually do, with an appraising of the quality of this movie, and do your best to keep your level of enjoyment of the movie on hold for now, because we'll get to that. But in like objective terms, how good is this movie? I'm going to start by suggesting an appraisal of the animation and saying that the animation of this movie is fine but not great. I think it's...
I like all the food is well animated. I think the characters aren't necessarily, like, the greatest. They're pretty standard. But the food, I feel like they did a it's stylized, but also, I don't know, I feel like it's well done. I feel like the character design of the food is good.
There's a lot of creativity in the food.
Mm. Yeah, well, I guess it's a separate thing from the
animation. That's kind of a separate thing from animation, and I feel like... Although there's a lot of creativity with the food, and we'll get to that creativity, and I have good things to say about it, but in terms of character design, the food even is not consistently designed, right? Mm. Like, that's one of the things to notice terms of...
Barry looks very different from, like, the taco monster and the...
Right.
And whatnot. Yeah.
So there's not consistency. The, like, just in terms of pure quality of animation, there's nothing bad about it, I would posit, but I would say that, like...
I'd like to see you do better.
I'd say this is not the best animated movie I've ever seen.
Okay. Yeah. I can see where you're coming from there. I don't like to diss that, because animation's really hard. I don't know.
It is. It's like we've been talking...
I mean, we were just talking not very long ago about Song of the Sea.
Exactly.
Which is, fantastic beyond all everything. So, like, yeah, when you compare it to something like that, then of course, yeah, that doesn't, this doesn't compare.
Like,
at
we
all.
Talked about Song of the Sea really recently, and I just listened to, because as we recorded this one, our episode on Prince of Egypt just aired, which gives you, by the way, a sense of the amount of backlog we have. You can figure it out if you want to, that we're recording this right the same day as Prince of Egypt aired. But Prince of Egypt also, beautiful animation.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've done several movies where I've said, like, oh, this movie is beautifully animated. And we come to this and I say,
it's okay.
It's fine.
So how about the voice acting? We've got, I think, Bill Hader doing a great job. I think in this one, it's interesting. They changed the actor for, I can't remember the character's name, the cop.
Earl.
Earl was Mr. T in the first movie and is Terry Crews in this movie. And Terry Crews, you may know him if you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, he plays Terry and he's essentially the same character, and it's hilarious.
He is doing a fantastic job in this movie, though. And like, Mr. T, that was stunt casting, and we're recording this having not seen the first one in a long time, so I don't remember how good Mr. T was in the first movie, but I do know that Terry Crews is great in this movie.
Yeah,
the character that he plays is reliably hilarious. And, like,
what I wonder is if Terry Crews, like, the first movie was long before Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Did Terry Crews base his performance as Terry on that? Though, and you get the impression that Terry Crews is Terry from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, is this guy. He just, like, I don't know.
He gives a bit of an impression of, like, he's, you know, both, a lot of the humor of Terry on Brooklyn Nine-Nine comes from the juxtaposition of him being extremely muscular and also soft-hearted. A little less in this movie.
A little less in this movie, you're right.
But similar, like, he's extremely muscular, but, you know, funny and witty also.
Yeah.
There's the same juxtaposition of he's tough and muscular, but goes against certain aspects of the jock stereotype.
Yeah. So what about some of the other actors? Other performances?
I think Will Forte, who plays the villain in this movie, is
Chester V.
Is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's really funny in the way that he pronounces some words idiosyncratically for no apparent reason. Like, he does his O's weird. And it's just... it's just funny. Like, it's a funny choice. A bully, or, you know, all the way through. I think he's really funny.
Yeah.
I think I have nothing but good to say about the vocal performances in this movie. Absolutely. I think they're good across the board.
How about Neil Patrick Harris?
Neil Patrick Harris as the monkey as Steve. He's so funny.
He said there's so few lines, but Steve is one of the funniest monkeys around.
Weird. Yeah. I think all the vocal performances are great. I have no complaints to make about it. I don't know that if I was going to call one of the vocal performances to stand out, I think it would be Will Forte as Chester V.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a close race.
Yeah.
I think they're all good. Kristen Schaal is funny. Anna Faris is funny. They're all, like, doing their thing really well. I don't have a complaint to make about any of the vocal performances.
Yeah. In terms of if this is a good movie, the story is well done. It's never, it doesn't deviate from itself. It goes from, like, they are friends together, they break up, they go to the island, there's this, like, off again, on again with his friends. Chester is the villain. They defeat, I don't know, you think it's muddled?
I think the plot is straightforward, but I think that the conflicts, the secondary conflicts are improperly motivated and are contrived. So the fight between one of them, the way the conflicts work in this movie is first, what's his name? Flint. First, there's a conflict between Flint and himself that he wants to impress the Chester V and doesn't. Then there's a conflict between... and that's fine. That's all good. Then there's a conflict between the whole group and the island. That's good and fine, I think. Then there's a conflict within the group that I think is contrived. I think they break up the group, and it's not, like, when he leaves, he doesn't trust or want the help of his friends.
Yeah.
And they get mad at him and storm off, and then he's like, oh, they were right, and goes back after them.
Mm-hmm.
Chester V drives a wedge between Flint and his friends, and I think it is not... I think it's contrived. I don't think it makes sense character-wise. I don't think there's enough there for him. Like, these are the people that, you know, he has... I mean, basically, and I think that drives to... I don't think this movie has a whole lot of emotional depth.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think I'm understating it when I say this movie doesn't have a whole lot of emotional depth.
No, it doesn't have much depth. No, definitely not. And I mean... That's fine because it's not a movie to get emotionally invested in.
No.
It's a movie to laugh with, and it does a very excellent job of that.
I think, like, I'm trying to, like, objectively critique some things about the movie, but we could maybe take our next step already into, despite this, I enjoy the heck out of this movie. Like,
I gotta say... This, of all movies, this isn't the first time we've watched it. It's about the third or fourth even time we've watched it. This of all movies we've watched with our kids surprised me the most.
Yeah.
Because this one and I think maybe Meet the Robinsons were ones that you just kind of pick arbitrarily. You're like, I guess we'll watch that. I guess that's a fun kids movie. I try to be picky, but I can't always be. And then it was so delightful and so good and so made me genuinely laugh all the time.
Yeah, same here. And like I was being critical of the story and the writing in some ways, but despite those criticisms, this movie and its predecessor are really unreasonably good. Like they're so much better than I had any reason to expect them to be. Yeah. And this movie... As you said, there's not a lot of emotional depth and the conflicts are improperly motivated and false and contrived, but who cares? It's so funny and so creative and like, it made me laugh a lot.
In terms of the writing, it's the sheer number of puns is like beyond impressive. Like, to come up with that many food-related puns, food and animal-related puns, is just like...
Flamingos!
Shrimpanzees! Those are some tasty-looking jellyfish!
Oh, what's that one over there?
That's just a tomato.
There's a leak in the boat!
Water elephant!
Sea sheep!
Cantaloupes.
Yeah. Puns are one of the kinds of humor that really people get upset about. People either love or they hate puns.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not, like, if a pun doesn't tickle you, you might watch this movie and think, like, what were they talking about?
Well, and you might think, if you listen to our other podcast, Clockworks, where we begin every episode with a pun that Paul makes and I shoot down, that I might... For instance, not like puns, but secretly I do like puns. I really like them. This movie is hilarious.
It was a shtick all along.
No, don't tell them.
She always thought I was funny.
I think that might be obvious.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But like, it's not like the puns are the thing that come immediately to mind, but so many things about this movie are funny. The weird pronouncing of words that Will Forte does.
The background stuff. That there's this one scene where we can't have a clip of it because it's all visual. It's they're having this serious conversation and in the background, Steve the monkey, Paul is laughing just me talking about it because he laughed so hard. Steve the monkey is trying to put out this birthday candle that won't go out. And he's just like, he can't put it out. He eats it and it goes in his tail and he's flailing around and no one in the scene is reacting to him at all. And then the next scene, he's still in the background trying
with
to put it out.
In his tail.
Like, it just never isn't. It's so funny. It's never not funny.
Yeah.
It is really delightful. This movie is has a lot of moments like that that are just delightful. And it has a few adult humor moments, but I think they are enough over the kids' head that they won't get them. There is, what comes to mind is he invents this laser beam that initially is pants. And so the laser beam is pointing straight out of his crotch.
Right.
And then the Sam, the woman is like, how about a hat instead? And so she puts it, and so then it's it coming out of his head and it's way more appropriate. And like, yeah, it's kind of a blink and you miss it joke. And there's a few of those little ones.
I think like, it's a funny joke anyway that like, he was going to wear it as pants, but it obviously looks like
exactly.
a hat.
Exactly.
But it also like, it looks like it's coming out of his crotch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And there's one or two of those, but yeah, they do go by very quickly.
I feel like they are the kind of adult joke that work in a kid's movie where it's funny on both levels. Like you say, to a kid, they just see it as, ha ha ha, it is clearly a hat. And adults see it a different way. And it goes by so quickly that you don't. Yeah, I mean, it's much like Lego Batman that we said about that, was that the adult jokes work on both levels, that the kids also can laugh at them and they're not so inappropriate that as to stand out.
Like Lego Batman, the pacing is quite frenetic.
Very, yes.
And like Lego Batman, I didn't really mind.
Yeah, exactly.
But someone might.
Yeah.
You might. Your mileage may vary. You might find the like frantic cut, 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 run around flailing and screaming.
Yeah.
Hard to focus on.
And frankly, this is like the third or fourth time I've seen this, and I got even more puns this time.
Yeah.
Like, there was one that I noticed this time that I had never noticed before, and so, like, they go by so very fast.
So, do you want to move on to taking this movie a little too seriously?
Yeah, we need to get past this, like, it's hilarious, but let's take it too seriously.
Way too seriously.
Okay.
Did you want me to say that along with you? Is that supposed to?
No, that's not. Okay. I was just being silly.
Okay, go.
Okay, so Sam Sparks is the Smurfette.
Yeah, that's massively.
Yeah. She has the one love interest of Flint, kind of. It's a weird love interest thing. I kind of like it, actually, that they don't really know how to kiss.
One of the hilarious jokes.
That's a holdover from the first movie, that they don't really know how to kiss. And then, like, you get the impression that maybe she wants a romantic relationship, but mostly it's just about the science. And like,
yeah, they want to start a lab together.
Yeah. And like, it's not like she's pining after him to like, how, you don't know what I mean. You don't, I mean really together, but no, she's on the same wavelength as him.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to talk about Sam Sparks, I think there's two things. One is, as the Smurfette, she's the only female character on the good team. This movie passes the Bechdel test because, the orangutan, whose name is Barb.
Barb
the orangutan, played by Kristen Schaal. Is also a female character, and the two of them have a conversation about whether each of them are legitimately scientists.
Yes.
But it's a quick conversation, they barely interact, and they are each the lone female member of their respective teams.
Yes. And one is an orangutan.
Having said that, although she's a Smurfette and there's a lot to criticize there, if you're going to have a lone female character, Sam Sparks is pretty great.
She is. She's scientific. She's smart. She's competent. She has all of her own agency.
Yeah.
Flint tries to come and tell her that he's going to the island by himself, and she's just like, no.
No, I'm coming along,
and there's no convincing her otherwise, because of course she is.
And she has her own motivation, and they mostly coincide with Flint's, but not because she wants to do what Flint wants. It's what a good partnership of any kind, romantic or not, looks like on film, which is two people whose goals align because they both want the same thing,
yeah,
rather than two people whose goals align because they want what the other one wants because the other one wants it, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
She is a meteorologist, and it's a holdover joke, a little bit of the last movie, mm-hmm. that in the last movie, meteorologists don't get respect, but she's a serious scientist of a meteorologist,
yeah.
And in this movie, they revisit that a little bit, mm-hmm. but it's mostly just like, she's a scientist, she wants to study weather, and she has helpful things to contribute, and she's adventurous and smart, but weird and quirky and funny. She isn't yeah. stuck with what often the Smurfette is, which is being the straight man.
Yeah.
She's great. I really like her as a character.
And I have a little bit more to say about Sam and Flynn.
Go.
Flint? Flint. Yeah. I keep wanting to say Flynn like Flynn Rider.
Flint.
Sam and Flint.
I'm sorry.
Really?
I'm doing that just to be a brat, but go ahead.
You are a brat. Sam and Flint, their relationship being kind of non-romantic, I appreciate that in a kid's movie. I, don't get me wrong, I love romantic movies, I love romantic comedies, but when it comes to kids' movies, I think that a little bit of romance goes a long way.
Yeah.
You don't need to have men and women in relationships in a kid's movie, because kids are already getting that all the time. I think that it's, that they don't need, maybe I'm going to go off on a rant that's not really related
go
to
ahead.
This, but I'm tired, but I get so tired of like my 6-year-old being told that like, oh, she's in love with her male classmate. And that's just like, she's 6. No, she isn't. It's, they can be friends with each other. And I think too many movies and TV shows pushing romance on children is just a negative thing in general. And I'm glad to have a movie that, where there's kind of this, a little bit of a subtext that Sam and Flint are in love with each other. It's barely explored, and I'm totally fine with that.
And I mean, in this part of what we mean when we talk about heteronormative, the major part of that is the assumption that all romantic relationships are heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
But another aspect of heteronormativity is all relationships between men and women are inherently sexual,
mm-hmm.
right?
Exactly.
So if there's a male character and a female character, they must get together in a romantic relationship. That's heteronormativity.
Yeah.
And this movie falls to it a little bit because they do start and end the movie kissing. But they spend a lot of the movie, their relationship revolves around intellectual respect and trying to help each other achieve their goals.
Exactly.
And then basically the last movie had a romantic relationship, and this movie only does as much as it needs to maintain continuity, but mm-hmm. it doesn't push that relationship forward at all.
Nope, not at all.
And why that's refreshing is exactly what you just said.
Yeah, exactly. So, what else is there to talk about?
Well, I noticed the team of good guys.
Mm-hmm. Diverse.
Yeah, it includes,
yep.
I mean, it includes Flint, white yeah. man, Sam's white man played by white man,
mm-hmm.
Sam Sparks, white woman played by white woman.
Yeah.
Earl, black man played by black man.
Mm-hmm.
Manny, the cameraman,
mm-hmm.
Latino man played by Latino man. He's mm-hmm. played by Benjamin Bratt.
Yes, who is wonderful,
who's so
way.
Good.
So, Manny is an interesting character, too. He's yeah. very complicated and funny. And
yeah. if we could talk about him just for a second to
yes.
say that a little bit like, I mean, he, a little bit like Earl or Terry Crews' characters, where part of the humor comes from a juxtaposition of mm-hmm. what you would expect.
Yeah.
Manny is, you know, the cameraman, but is a surgeon, and starts the movie as like a veterinary surgeon and then gets called back to be the cameraman. Is like, I can drop everything, and leaves
yeah.
a calf half delivered. But I feel like, I mean, this may just be ignorance, but I feel like they're not using or playing with any stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not subverting stereotypes. They're just ignoring them completely.
Yeah.
He's this weird juxtaposition of, you know, interests and quirky, unexpected skills,
mm-hmm.
but none of them are like, oh, you know, Latino men who are cameramen. Like, if that's a stereotype, it's one I'm unaware of.
Me too, yeah.
Or...
We're very Canadian, though.
Yeah, that is
so
true.
So, feel free to correct us if we're wrong here, because there's just not that population in Canada at all.
True. Very true. Anyway, but Latino men played by Latino men.
Yeah, so it's a, what you're saying is, yeah, it's a diverse cast. It's a racially
diverse cast, both cast and characters. Mm-hmm. And they don't have any, I think that they avoid tokenism. Mm-hmm. I think they avoid stereotyping. I think they avoid what we complained about in some past movies of having... someone be a white man unless there is a plot-relevant reason for them not to be.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason Manny needs to be.
The main character is a white man, which that is playing into that. But that's, I mean, that is what it is. It's hard to find a movie that isn't that, and that's a problem in general.
And that doesn't mean that this movie doesn't deserve some shade for that.
Yeah.
But having thrown that shade, there's other things to be worth... being pleased with.
Yeah. And I think that speaking of race and identity, the orangutan ape, Kristen Schaal plays an ape who isn't super intelligent. And throughout the movie, she gets called a monkey and corrects people to be calling her an ape, which is funny because our kids also corrected it because they're very obsessed with if it doesn't have a tail, it's not a monkey. And her boss, who she thinks is her friend, constantly calls her a monkey, and she realizes that he's not her friend in the end because he refuses to call her by her chosen identity.
Yep.
And I think that's a really powerful metaphor and a really important point to make is call people what they're asking you to call them. She and what they are.
Yeah.
She's not a monkey, she's an ape. And she's insulted when you call her a monkey. And if you continue to do that, you're not her friend.
Yeah.
If you continue to call someone by something they don't want to be called, mm-hmm. you're not their friend and you are being cruel to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this movie makes a very subtle but important point about identity that way. And I liked that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. And that, I mean, there is a monkey in the movie.
Yes, exactly.
So it's partly an aspect of...
And the monkey's an idiot.
And the monkey's an idiot. Yeah. It's like, it's about accuracy, but it's about respecting her. And it's mm-hmm. explicit. That's really the part about there's a monkey in the movie is irrelevant to the point I was going to make, which is this. It's about accuracy, but it's mostly about respecting her. And the mm-hmm. movie explicitly... makes that clear.
Yeah.
Like, the movie does not say, I'm not an ape because, I mean, the movie doesn't say, I'm an ape and here's why that's inaccurate and as a scientist I feel offended when you're inaccurate. No. The movie explicitly mm-hmm. says, if you don't respect me,
mm-hmm.
like, if he is your friend, why does he call you monkey when you're ape?
Yep.
Chester thinks you're a monkey.
Well, I'm an ape. Chester knows that.
But he calls you a monkey.
It is true. He does.
He's just joking around. Chester's my best friend.
If Chester was really your friend, would he still call you a monkey?
Yeah. I totally agree with what you said.
So one of the overarching things in this movie is about Chester V., He is Chester V is Flint's childhood hero.
Right.
Who fails to live up to that, who is in fact the villain of the piece. What does that say about it's a common thing in movies and in fiction where childhood heroes fail. So what does that say about
why does your childhood hero in this movie and in fiction in general?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking you.
Villainous.
Why is a childhood hero villainous?
I think possibly there are two different avenues of depth to that. And the one is it is a critique of hero worship in general,
mm-hmm.
yeah. right? And there's an aspect of that critique of hero worship that's connected to, like, the standard, fairly trite message of a lot of kids' movies of be true to yourself and only look up to yourself and don't look up to anyone who isn't yourself. But I think only to a minor degree.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more of hero worship is different from respecting someone who has earned your respect, right? And what makes Chester V a good stand-in for the inappropriate kind of hero worship is that Flint idolizes Chester V, and that is dangerous because of the difference between idolizing and respecting.
Mm-hmm.
So Chester V inspires him appropriately. Chester V could have been exactly as villainous as he is and still have value in Flint's life for inspiring him to be a scientist
mm-hmm.
and inventor. But the two things that are dangerous about Flint's relationship to Chester V and about the concept of hero worship in general are that he makes it a blanket admiration. So he admires one aspect of Chester V and therefore wants to emulate everything about Chester V.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, two, hero worship is not based on mutual respect, and it can never be.
Mm. Yeah.
Hero worship can never be nuanced by mutual give and take as a real adult relationship of respect can be. So you can continue to look up to and respect someone, but when you become an adult, you have to respect someone on adult terms, and that means demanding and expecting respect to be given to you as well as taken.
Mm-hmm.
And hero Absolutely. Worship can never be that. So if
hero worship so easily ignores flaws because yeah. of that, because you... if you don't demand respect back, then you can easily ignore their flaws because they're not giving you anything.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
And I think, so it's partly about growing up. When mm-hmm. you grow up, you have to learn, and it's difficult and often painful, you have to learn to treat the adults that you have revered as fellow adults
mm-hmm.
whom you can still respect on equal footing. And it's also about the danger of hero worship in general. The more you hero worship someone, the more likely they are to be villainous. That is to say, the more likely they are to fail to live up to that hero worship.
Absolutely.
And that disappointment is, in fact, what makes them a villain.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on from that, moving to maybe our last point. Do we have anything else to say?
Okay, so here's the thing. Here's the thing about this movie. It's fun. It's charming. It's
yep.
super entertaining, and there's food, and they're running around. But the major plot point of why Chester V is villainous is that he's going to kill all this food to put into food bars, and killing this food is evil. And when you think about it for even more than half a second...
it's a secret vegan propaganda movie. You guys, we should all be vegans.
I'm, like, not even joking about...
I know you're not.
I'm taking this way too seriously.
Yep.
That all food, including plants, by the way, was once alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this movie, it explicitly, like, you know, it's so terrible that he wants to kill this cheeseburger. What do you think a cheeseburger is made out of?
Yeah.
I think it's possible to read this as secretly vegan propaganda. And I think, like, you know... I would not be against a movie being vegan propaganda. I'm not a vegan, but there is a real moral argument to be made for veganism, and
Absolutely.
I would respect a movie for making it.
Yep.
But there's I think, two ways of reading it.
Mm-hmm.
One is that this movie has a secret or a...
Clandestine
message that killing things to eat them is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another, I think, probably more accurate thing, which is this movie is so thoughtless about where food actually comes from.
That's where I think it actually is. I think it's not vegan propaganda. I think what it is, we have become so separate from where our food comes from, especially children. We don't like to tell them that your hamburger is made out of a cow and your your bacon is made out of a pig and your chicken is a chicken.
Yeah, that, I you mean, know, your kid's pretty slow if they don't figure that one out.
They might not. We try to, as much as we can. I mean, this is just to toot our own horns as parents, because we're obviously the most perfect parents out there. Ha, well, ha, 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 ha.
Yes.
But we try to be really clear to our kids that, hey, this meat we're eating, it once was an animal. We're not going to pretend like it wasn't. We're not going to hide that from you. And if you choose not to eat it because of that, we'll respect that.
Yeah, and basically, I said a second ago that there's a moral argument to be made for veganism. I think if you are not morally comfortable with the fact, and your child, if your 6-year-old is not morally comfortable with the fact that their bacon used to be a pig, and that the only way you can eat bacon is by killing a pig, then don't eat bacon.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And this movie, I think, by talking about, like, shrimpanzees, they're shrimp that are shrimp are already animals. Shrimp are already alive animals,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And that, like, there's a plot point of Flint invents the food deliverer that is a teleporter that only works on food, but, like, not to put too fine a point on it, but Flint, you yourself are made of meat.
Yep.
There is no distinction between you and a hamburger, really.
Yeah.
Right? And all that to say, we're so divorced from where our food comes from, it's much easier for us to imagine that shrimp is just a thing that you get from the freezer, and that...
I mean, when you say we, you mean people like us who live in the city, who get their food from a supermarket, who don't seek out... I mean, we try to, but frankly, we don't. We get our food, we get our meat that's shrink-wrapped in styrofoam, and our shrimp is frozen... And sometimes we live on the ocean, so sometimes we're getting our fish from the ocean, but not very often.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But your standard Western person isn't killing their own cows.
I think there's two serious aspects of that. One we've mostly already covered, but just to say it really clearly, is about animal cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to kill and eat animals if you don't think about the fact that this was once a living thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a moral imperative for you to take that into account if you are going to eat formerly living animals.
Yep.
And the other one is about consumerism and capitalism and how disconnect, I mean, not to be Marxist about it, but how disconnected we are from the means of production, how the ultimate source of bread is the bread truck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism encourages us not to think about where anything we consume comes from.
Absolutely.
It encourages us to identify ourselves and to interact with the world as consumers. And this movie is completely reinforcing that.
Absolutely.
By how they think about and how they present what food is.
Absolutely.
And so there's no such thing as farms.
Nope.
There's no such thing even as butchers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is profoundly alienating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a worldview that is only possible if you're a city dweller. It's only possible if you are
living in a first world country.
Living in a first world country. And it is the kind of thing that I think really is psychologically and emotionally harmful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. So,
I don't know. We've
gotten seriously off topic in some of these rants.
I don't think this is off topic at all. I think this is entirely on topic. This is
entirely on topic. You're right. Okay, well.
So let's, having said that, let's come back to the movie. Yeah.
We've got to rate this movie, and we've got to rate it whether it is good or whether it is bad or good or whatever, and then seriously bad or seriously good. I noticed in an old episode we talked about medium, and we've never called anything medium. We're in extremes kind of people.
I guess.
Anyway, this movie is seriously is good and seriously good.
I think in terms of good and bad, I think this movie is good, and I think it is unreasonably good.
Mm-hmm.
It is much better than it has any right to be.
Yep.
Right?
I don't know why you always say any right to be, because it came out of nowhere, because it's so
When I say it has any right to be, that is just my way of saying, really, it's my way of saying, than I expected it to be.
Than you expected it to be.
It's way, way better than I expected it to be, and it's way, way better than if I examine the pieces I think is going to come out of it.
Yeah.
In terms of seriously good, I think it's seriously medium.
Okay.
Because I think there are some really high points in terms of seriousness, but I think there are some real problematics to this movie as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Medium?
Medium. Medium.
I can go for that. Medium rare.
It's good, very good, and seriously medium.
All right. Well.
All right.
That brings us to the end of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. I hope we do an episode of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 1 that doesn't make us liars at the beginning of this. We have trouble because our kids pick the movies. We can't, like, go against them. That's kind of jerky. We've set a precedent with them that they pick the movie on a Friday night. So we might either have to convince them to watch the first one, which I think they wanted to.
Yeah, I think it's a sell that we can make.
Or watch it on our own, which we don't really want to. All right, well.
Because
we like to watch grown-up movies. Did you know that? We also like to watch grown-up
movies. We also watch grown-up movies and TV.
Mostly TV.
So, Jan, if people wanted to find us, talk to us, get back to us about why this movie is great or not great or whatever.
Send us some puns about food and what we talked about. I wanted this episode to be much more punny, and it just isn't. All right, you can talk to us. You can tweet to us on Twitter, at WTSCast. You can send us an email, waytooseriouslycast@gmail.com. Or if you want to support us, you want to kick us a little bit of money, you could support us on Patreon. Patreon.com. I said that like it's a question because I feel nervous asking people for this.
Well,
Patreon.com/clockworkscast. Kick us a dollar a month, whatever you can afford. You get a little bonus, little trivia episode to go with your regular episodes. That's kind of fun. And Paul, you keep wanting to interrupt me. What do you want to say?
I was just going to say, maybe I won't on this episode. At some point, I think we need to give a rundown of all the fabulous benefits you get from supporting us on Patreon, because they are many.
They are legion.
But maybe. Maybe this isn't the one, because we're running long.
Yep. All right. And one last thing is rate us. Rate us and review us on iTunes or whatever the Apple thing is nowadays. I still call it iTunes. Just open that up. Even if you don't use it to listen to the podcast, that's where you have to review things. So just take a day.
Take a day. Wow. Take a day off work.
No. I'm just saying. I mean,
tell your boss.
Maybe you don't listen to that many podcasts, but I need a whole day. Just open up your iTunes. Go through all the podcasts you listen to. Give them all 5 stars. Give them a rating, because that's the way to support podcasts, and that's the way to support this one. So please do. We love you guys.
Yeah, and I'm going to pipe in to say what you just said, that, like, rate and review us, but do rate and review all the podcasts you listen to. Like, we're always, every podcast I listen to begs for ratings and reviews, and until I started doing a podcast, it means so much.
Yep.
Don't just rate and review us. Rate and review every podcast you listen to. So thank you very, very much for listening to us today. I've been Paul Moffat.
I've been Jan Moffat.
And
have a very good time.
Boo.
You're not allowed to boo me. Boo you.
The potato. I don't have a...
There were meatballs. Meatballs. That was the best one.
And then there were matzo balls.